this is kind of an embarrassing thing to do research on, but you know, I guess the horse is already out of the barn. You know, it's nothing I haven't talked about elsewhere. Hey, how are you?
How's it going?
It's going all right. Yeah, no, but I'm not going to lecture while this. Thank you for inviting me here. I'm in the CS department at UT. Name is Scott Aronson. I joined a year and a half ago, and I'm actually on sabbatical. I'm not here this year, but I am back here for a couple weeks, and I'm glad that we were able to make this math club thing work out. So my main interest is capabilities and limitations of quantum computers. I teach an undergrad course. We'll be teaching it again next year, called Intro to Quantum Information Science. Ewan took it. Did anyone here take that? Yeah, okay, yeah, you took it, good. Hope to see some more of you, and I will also be teaching an honors computability and complexity course next year. I assure you that I work on many serious things, but what I'll tell you about today is something I've worked on that's less serious. I gave Zachary, I guess, a bunch of possible topics, and it looks like this one was the most popular. So time travel it is. Okay. So in particular, I have actually two papers that are about how does complexity theory and computability theory change in a world with closed time-like curves.
Okay.
Maybe we should close the door. We don't know whether closed time-like curves exist or not. It is one of the greatest questions of science and of science fiction, I guess. But in classical general relativity, one can construct solutions to Einstein's field equations that do have closed time-like curves. You can go around and you can meet your past self. All of these solutions tend to have something weird about them. The first ones were constructed actually by Gödel. That Gödel in 1949 as a 70th birthday present to his friend Einstein. But those involved like some infinite rotating cylinder. Not something very easy to engineer. Since then, people have shown how you could create a wormhole, right? And once you had a wormhole, then you could just take like one mouth of it, put it in a spaceship, accelerate it to relativistic speed, return it to Earth. Now you've got a wormhole connecting two different times, right? By special relativity. The trouble is, in order to make a wormhole that's actually traversable and stable, you seem to need matter with negative energy density, okay, which does not appear to exist in our world. Okay, so ultimately, the question of whether time travel in the past is possible is a question to be answered by a quantum theory of gravity, which we don't really have yet. Okay, although there are some ideas in that direction. So I'll say whether. Time travel to the future is definitely possible. We can do it at 1 second per second, and if you want to do it faster, you can accelerate to relativistic speed, or you could also just cryogenically freeze yourself. details to be left for engineering. Okay. But whether time travel in the past is possible, what we will regard as an open problem in physics? My personal guess would be no. But we will have to learn, much, much deeper things about quantum gravity before we understand why it's not possible, if indeed it isn't. In the meantime, it's very interesting to just study, supposing that we had closed time-like curves, what would they need? What could they be used for? Since I'm a computer scientist, I'm especially interested in how would they change the theory of computation. Okay, so many people have an idea. Well, of course they would let you do just about anything, right? And because all you would have to do is just spend as long as you wanted to do a computation, trillions of years or whatever, and then just send the answer back in time to before the computer even started, right? Okay, so that's a very simple proposal. Now, the first point I want to make is that there's at least two things that are wrong with this, okay, that I think are fishy about. Okay, the first is that, it's a little bit like, just like maxing out your credit card, right, and saying, I don't care that, I can spend all this stuff, right? You're going to have to pay later, right? Like, so even though you've got the answer at the very beginning, you've only gotten it because you're going to do trillions of years of computation later, right? So we could argue about, are we properly accounting for resources here? Even in a world with closed time-like curves, we should still try to, properly account for, what are all the computational resources that we're using, and are they polynomial or are they exponential? Ask the kind of questions that we like to in theoretical computer science. Okay, but a second issue is that we haven't engaged with the central issue, the central thing that makes closed time-like curves interesting, which is the grandfather paradox, right? And that's the thing where you go back in time, you kill your grandfather, therefore you were never born, but therefore no one goes back to kill your grandfather. So are born, right? So it's the classic paradox of time travel. Okay, so in the computational context, we could say, well, what if we program the computer to go back in time and switch itself off? Right? What happens then? Right? It seems like in order to have even a meaningful model of computation, we need some account of either of what happens in that kind of situation, or else some reason why that situation will not arise. Right. So people have thought about these issues for decades. Right. There were ideas, that basically amount to, anytime you go back in time and you try to kill your grandfather, or, the gun will jam, or you'll fail for some weird-looking reason, okay, but, the universe will sort of struggle to maintain causal consistency, at all costs. Okay, but, that sort of raises more questions than it answers, right? How does the universe maintain this consistency? What are the actual dynamics? What does it do, right? So, I think a major insight about these questions came in 1991, when David Deutsch published a paper, which was called "Quantum Mechanics Near Closed Time-Like Lines," Deutsch is mostly famous for being one of the inventors of quantum computing, which he invented when he was a postdoc here at UT in the late 70s and early 80s. Okay, but this was a later paper, where he was thinking about closed time-like curves, in the context of quantum mechanics, right, and in particular in the context of the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, which he's a very diehard proponent of. Okay, but the basic insight that Deutsch has, although he would never do this, one can state it without using quantum mechanics at all, right? One can state it just in terms of classical probability theory. Okay, and so basically what he said is that Well, the grandfather paradox can be resolved if you'll just broaden a little bit what you mean by a state of a system. Okay, and even just to the state being a probability distribution. Okay, so if we let our state be a probability distribution, and let's also assume that there are only there's only a finite number of bits that can fit into the closed time-like curve. Okay, that will be important here. Later we'll see what happens when we relax that assumption. Okay, but if I have a sample from a probability distribution, right? I can think of that as just a vector of probabilities. That gets fed into my CTC. Let me draw it. Here's my CTC. Okay. So at some given point, I have some sample from a distribution, and then the whole action, of the laws of physics acting all the way around the loop, I'm going to just model by some. I'm just going to call it S. Okay. And S, I'll think of as a stochastic transformation. Right? In other words, like a Markov matrix. Right. So any kind of physical action on a probability distribution, right, I can think of as just a linear transformation of the probability vector, right? In particular, a non-negative matrix where all of the columns sum to one, right, which we call a stochastic matrix. Okay, and so then, so let's say, I start with this probability vector V, I apply S, I get out some other vector, and then causal consistency just says that I should get back the same vector V that I started with. Okay, and so then Deutsch says, well, we should think of a closed time-like curve as just some resource where we get to specify in S, the action around the closed time-like curve, and then nature is forced to find a V that satisfies this equation, right? That, in other words, that's a fixed point of S. Okay, and the trouble, fixed points don't always exist. That's one way to state the grandfather paradox, right? That was a mapping without a fixed point. Okay, but as long as we're talking about, stochastic matrices, it is a basic fact that every stochastic matrix does have a fixed point, right? Every stochastic matrix has a stationary distribution, at least in finite dimensions. Right, it has a plus one eigenvector. I don't know how many of you have encountered this fact, right? But it's true, right? So for example, with the grandfather paradox, we could model it as it corresponds to this 2x2 matrix, right? If you're dead, then you're alive. If you're alive, then you're dead. Okay, that's a not operation. Seems like a paradox, but we notice that it does have a stationary distribution, which is what, anyone?
Half-F.
So, in fact, this is the unique stationary distribution, for in this particular case. Okay, so Deutsch's resolution of the grandfather paradox is simply, you're born with half probability. If you're born, you go back in time, you kill your grandfather, therefore you're born with half probability, so when everything's consistent, there's no paradox. Okay? You can think of it as like there's two tracks, which, Deutsch is perfectly happy with as a many-worlder, right? But, one where you're born and one where you're not born, and, this one, goes back to sort of become the beginning of this one, and this one goes back to become the beginning of that one, right? But the whole picture is globally consistent. Okay, Deutsch was really interested in the quantum case where the state inside of here would be not just a probability distribution, but would actually be a quantum state. Okay, something called a quantum mixed state, right? And the operation would be a general transformation of quantum state, something called a superoperator. Okay, but then it's again true that every quantum mechanical operation has at least one quantum state, which is a fixed point of it. Okay, right? So, you know, so sort of the quantum generalization of this fact about stochastic matrices is also true, and that was Deutsch's observation. Okay, that you know, we could always resolve the, you know, once we remember that the world is quantum mechanical and that states are not just these deterministic things, then we could always resolve the grandfather paradox in that way if we wanted. Okay. But it's not as if this gets us out of all hot water, okay? You know, right, this solution leads to many, many strange phenomena of its own, okay? And that's what I want to tell you about, okay? The very first thing that you might notice is that, well, you know, this sort of resolves the grandfather paradox. It leaves us with the grandfather anti-paradox. Okay, what's the grandfather anti-paradox? Well, it's that, you know, you go back in time and you do nothing, okay? So, let's say it corresponds to around the closed time-way curve, we apply the identity matrix, okay? Well, why is that a paradox? Well, it's not. The problem is just that it has too many solutions, right? Like, you're alive, you go back, you know, nothing happens, that would be a solution. You're dead, you know, nothing happens, that would also be a solution, right? So, you know, so we can have multiple fixed points, right? And, you know, there seems to be no principle that chooses, you know, which one of them, right? Usually we think that, you know, the only freedom you have in choosing the state of the universe is to choose the initial conditions. You know, and maybe, you know, the results of quantum measurements if you're not a many-worlder, okay? And then, you know, but then, you know, everything else should just be, you know, determined by just propagating the equations of physics forward. Right here, you know, in a closed time-like curve, that's not the case, right? You would have multiple consistent solutions, and nature just sort of freely picks one of them, okay? So, but all right, let's not worry about that too much, right? If we're going to think about using closed time-like curves for computation, then, you know, we could just try to create situations where every fixed point that exists requires nature to solve a hard computational problem or something like that, right? And in that way, we could sort of cut through this issue, right? Say, you know, no matter what nature chooses, it's going to be, you know, doing something that's hard. Okay, so, you know, but that actually brings me to, you know, what I think is the, you know, maybe the you know, one of the most sort of, one of the strangest things that we're confronted with, you know, if we actually think that a closed time-like curve is this region where nature finds a fixed point of whatever we do. Okay, and that's that, so maybe it's best illustrated with what I'll call the Shakespeare paradox. Okay, this is the thing where, you know, you go back in time to the, you know, William Shakespeare, and you say, listen, you know, I have something that'll save you some effort. Here's your collected works. Right? And he says, oh man, thank you. This is really, yeah, this is exactly how I would have said it, you know. Now I don't have to write all these plays. All right, so he's grateful. He, you know, publishes what you gave him. You know, that goes in history, becomes his collected works. You get it, you send it back. Right? So, you know, now notice this is different from the grandfather paradox, right? Because there's no contradiction here. Everything is in this story is completely consistent. Okay? The only paradox, if you like, is one of computational difficulty. Okay? Somehow, you know, Hamlet popped into the world, and no one went to the effort to write it. Okay, so there was I don't know if any of you saw, like, the fourth Star Trek movie was based on this premise also, where they go back in time and they give some important invention to the people of the 1980s, who then, you know, they go and invent it, and then, you know, and then that's how it was invented, and there's no, you know. There was never anything else, right? No one ever had to actually have the aha insight, because it's all just a causal loop. Okay, so we can actually turn that into an algorithm, if you like, for efficiently solving NP-complete problems with a closed time-like curve. Okay, Okay, so you want to see that? So for those of you, how many of you know what an NP complete problem is? Okay, some of you. So what's important for us is just that, you know, these are a famous class of hard combinatorial search problems, right? Where have the property that there's an exponential number of possible solutions. You know, you're looking for a solution that satisfies a whole bunch of constraints. You know, a good example is solving a Sudoku puzzle. Hey, that's literally an NP complete problem. You know, solving a jigsaw puzzle with no picture. Another example, you know, fitting a bunch of boxes into the trunk of your car would be an example. So they all have the property that there's this astronomical space of possible solutions, and solutions can be checked efficiently, right? So if someone claims to have found a solution, then they can exhibit it. They can just show it to you, and there's a fast, which would mean a polynomial time algorithm to check that, yes, that's a good solution. But if no one tells you, you know, the solution, then as far as we know, you might need an exponential search to find it, right? No one has proven that you need it. That's a problem that some of you may have heard of called the P versus NP problem. Okay, but let's see how any of these, you know, super hard search problems could be very easily solved in a world with closed time-like curves. Okay, so, we'll imagine. Is that we have some Boolean function f, which maps n input bits to one output bit. Okay, and let's say that our task is to find an x such that f of x equals 1, you know, if there are any. Okay, and f is something that we can efficiently compute, right, for any given x. Okay, so this is, you know, basically the definition of an NP problem, is a problem that can be put into that format. Okay, so of course the trouble is, you know, there are 2 to the n possible x's, right? So if you didn't know anything smarter to do, you'd be stuck spending a very astronomical amount of time looking for your x. If, let's say, there's only one x such that f of x equals 1. And you don't know any shortcut to find it. Okay, but with a closed time-like curve, what we could do is let me just write some pseudocode. So we take an n-bit string x from the future. We compute f of x. If f of x equals 1, then we send x back, okay, just as it was. If f of x equals 0, then we send back, I'm going to say, x plus 1 mod 2 to the n. Here, thinking of x now as an integer from 0 up to 2 to the n minus 1. You know, encoded in binary. Right, I can always think of an n-bit string as an integer. Okay, so you know, when I like send back the next possible solution, looping back to the first one when I get to the last one. Okay, so let's go through this. Suppose that that there are x's, one or more x's, such that f of x equals 1. Then what would be the fixed points of this mapping? Yeah, any such x or any distribution over such x's, you know, would be technically a fixed point. And those would be the only fixed points, right? So, you know, so if there are solutions, then the only fixed point of this map is that we just, a solution appears. Just like, you know, Shakespeare's plays just appear then, right, in the example, right? So, you know, just by constructing the right kind of code, you know, and then putting it inside a closed time-like curve, we force nature to solve our NP-complete problem. just in order to find a consistent solution to this. Okay, so that's kind of the trick. Okay, now, by the way, what happens if there are no solutions? Can anyone tell me what's the fixed point then?
The
uniform distribution over all x's is then the unique fixed point, right? And so then if you get out, you know, an x and you see that it's not a solution, then you just know that there's no solutions. So either way, you are in the answer. Okay. I guess 12 or 13 years ago, I got interested in, you know, so what is actually the limit of what you can do in this, you know, in this kind of model? Fine, you can do NP complete problems, that's great, but in computer science, we know many things that are even harder than NP complete problems, right? And, you know, we like to classify things. So, just to like briefly orient you, right? P is the class of decision problems that are solvable in polynomial time. We think of these as like the efficiently solvable problems for a standard digital computer, like the one in your pocket. NP, non-deterministic polynomial time, that's the class of all the problems for which a solution is efficiently checkable if it's given to you, right? And then the NP complete problems just means sort of like the maximally hard problems in NP, right? Those NP problems to which every other NP problem can be efficiently reduced. A big discovery of computer science in the 70s is that lots and lots of problems that people care about actually are this NP complete class, okay? But you can go even higher than that. Just to tell you a few things, there's this class called P-space. Anyone know what P-space is? Yeah?
Stuff that you can compute with unlimited time, but a polynomial amount of space.
Perfect, yeah. It's what you can compute with a polynomial amount of memory, and let's say up to exponential time. Because, you know, you'll never actually want more than exponential time. Because if you spent more than that, then you would loop back to a state that you had been in previously by the pigeonhole principle. Right. So let's say polynomial space and up to exponential time. And then there's x, which is everything you can do in exponential time without the polynomial space restriction. Right. And these fit together like this. If you're wondering, you know, can we prove that these containments are actually strict? Well, we know that P is strictly contained in X. Okay? Which notice implies that either P is strictly contained in NP, or NP is strictly contained in P space, or P space is strictly contained in X. At least one of those has to be true. We believe for half a century that all three of them are true. But, you know, if you solve those, you'll win. You know, if you prove any of those, you'll win eternal fame. But now we can ask, well, how far up do closed time-like curves actually get you in the complexity hierarchy? This first result is from me and Lance Fort now. From around 2005, and we showed that actually you can get with a classical computer inside of a closed time-like curve, you actually get everything in this class P space, and no more than that. You know, P space is exactly what you get. Okay, so we could say polynomial time with a closed time-like curve is equal to P space. Okay, or you could say, well, you know, the effect of a closed time-like curve is to make time just look like space as a computational resource, which, you know, maybe shouldn't have surprised us in retrospect, right? That's kind of the whole point, that we get to reuse time, you know, as if it were space. But, you know, but this actually has to be proved, right? So how did we show this? Let's just first see how to solve p-space problems using a closed time-like curve computer, okay? You know, you want one of these fixed point algorithms, okay? And again, the requirement is anything that we do inside of the closed time-y curve, that has to be a polynomial time computation, right? So that has to be like a fast algorithm, just, you know, something simple. Okay, all of the computational hardness has to come from nature having to find a fixed point of that thing that we do. Okay, so how can we do p-space? Well, so a polynomial space machine, you know, a good way to think about it is, you know, it just proceeds through some huge number of steps, right? So like we let M0 be the initial state, and then if you're in M0, you know, you do a step of computation, and that changes your state to M1, right? And then, you know, and then from M1 you go to M2, and so on, until, you know, possibly an exponential number of steps. Finally, you reach a state where your machine halts, and it says either accept or reject, right? Well, for simplicity, we think about problems with yes or no answers. Okay, so it writes a single bit that says, you know, is the answer accept or reject? Okay, and, you know, there could be other states that are just not reachable, you know, in the sequence, but, you know, that you could nevertheless write down. All right, so now we have to construct our closed time-like curve algorithm. And, you know, we have to make sure that its fixed points will always give us the answers to whatever p-space problem we wanted to solve. So here's what we do. We say, we take from the as input from the future a state, you know, a possible state of our computer, which I'll call just M(t). Let me assume that my computer comes with a clock, so you know it counts off how many steps have been happening. So t time steps, and the state is m, or the mt, and then some additional bit b, which will be like a flag bit, okay? And then we say, if this is not a state where our machine is halting, this is just like a normal state, then we send back to the past, to the beginning of the computation, just, you know, like the next step in the computation, t plus 1, mt plus 1, and we leave the flag bit the same. Okay? Now, if M(t) is a halting state, and the answer to the computation is like a bit A, let's say 0 for reject or 1 for accept, then we send back, we go back all the way back to the initial state, so 0, M0, and we set the flag bit to A. Okay? So now can anyone, And if we get something that's just not like a valid state at all, then we again just go back to the, you know, beginning with the flag bit set to whatever we like. Okay, so can anyone tell me what are the fixed points? Can anyone figure out what are the fixed points of this computation? Or, you know, is there one fixed point? Is there more than one? All right. Well, maybe it'll help if I draw a picture. Okay. So the picture is, you know, we sort of have two parallel tracks. The computation can proceed through all of its steps with the flag bit set the whole time to 0, or the computation can proceed through all of its steps with the flag bit set the whole time to 1. Okay, and then, you know, we reach, you know, finally the halt state of the machine, and then what happens? The flag bit gets set to whatever is the correct value. Let's say that it's 1. Okay, then from here we would go back to here, and from here we would go over to here.
Okay.
So what are the fixed points of this? What? Yeah, yeah, right. It's just the, you know, there's one fixed point. It's just the uniform distribution over all the steps of the computation, but with the flag bit set to one.
Right.
So now I just read the, you know, if I, so I didn't say this, but we sort of, you know, imagine, you know, in the sort of detailed model, there's sort of this closed time-like curve region, which, you know, looks like that. And then there are sort of what we call the ordinary causality respecting part of the universe, which is not in the closed time-like curve, right, which is where we live, okay? And, you know, for it to be interesting, well, you know, these two can interact with each other, so I can have sort of logic gates that go between here and here. And the result of that is that whatever is the fixed point that is found by nature in the closed time-like curve region, I can sort of observe it. You know, I can see it in the causality respecting region, right? So I can see a sample from this this fixed point probability distribution, and then I just read the flag bit, and I know the answer to my p-space problem. Okay. So now, can anyone give me an argument for why you would not be able to do more than p-space, and you know, even with a closed time-like curve computer? Well, you know, okay. So what has to be shown here is that, you know, for a given any closed time-like curve computation, anything like this, if I have polynomial space and unlimited time, I can figure out what the answer is, you know, without needing a closed time-like curve. Right. So basically, you know, all I have to do, you know, as I just noticed, right, you know, like I have this graph, right, where the possible states of my computer correspond to vertices, you know, and then the, you know, it's a directed graph, right, the sort of successor operation, whatever I'm doing inside the closed time-like curve, that gives me the edges. And then the fixed points, you know, well, there will be one fixed point corresponding to every cycle in the graph, right? You know, and the graph, you know, because it's a finite graph, you know, and every vertex has some outgoing edge, right, it'll have to have at least one cycle, right? And, you know, for every cycle will give us a fixed point, okay? And it is an exponentially large graph, you know, so there's that, okay? But, you know, with a polynomial amount of memory, nevertheless, I can figure out where the cycles are. How do I do it?
Just walk,
yeah. Just start anywhere and just keep iterating, you know, and if I iterate, let's say, you know, if my computer has n bits, then after I've iterated for 2 to the n steps, I must have hit a cycle, right? And then I can just sort of keep a counter, you know, to sort of keep track of, you know, to figure out when I've gotten into the cycle. And then, you know, once I've gotten into it, then I just sample a random point in the cycle. And that is a fixed point. Okay. So then, the sort of main result that we actually had here, this was something by me and John Watrous in 2008, where we were interested, well, you know, what if you have also a quantum computer that could go inside of this closed time-like curve, right? You know, could that even give you, you know, more than p-space? Okay, well, you know, we knew that it gives you at least p-space because a quantum computer can always simulate a classical computer, right? But maybe it could give you more, right? And so the only upper bound that I was able to show was that at any rate a quantum computer gives you no more than x. Okay, so it was somewhere between here and here. Okay, so the main result in our 2008 paper is that what we call BQP-CTC, you know, bounded error quantum polynomial time with a closed time-like curve, is again equal to p-space. Okay, so in other words, once you have time travel to the past, a quantum computer gives you no additional advantage. You might as well just use a classical computer at that point. Okay, but you should be happy because you've got a lot of power. Okay, either way. So to do this, we had to show that even for a polynomial time quantum algorithm acting, you know, around the closed time-like curve, we could still, in polynomial space, figure out, a fixed point of it would take exponential memory even just to write down the description of it. But we could figure out, is this a fixed point that would cause us to accept or cause us to reject? Right? We could figure out the properties of the fixed point using only polynomial memory. Okay? And this was basically a big linear algebra problem. I probably won't go through the details of it, only because to show them to you, I'd have to show you some of the basics of what are quantum mixed states, what are super operators, which are actions on quantum states, and then how do we, given any super operator, how do we construct a mixed state that's a fixed point of that super operator. Okay, we had to not only do that, not only prove that a fixed point exists, which is what Deutsch did, but show how that we could actually get constructive access to the fixed point in polynomial space. Okay, to do that, we had to use some algorithms that were invented in the early 1980s for doing linear algebra with very, very small amounts of memory, right? And even for matrices where the entries are rational functions, it took some pages of doing, but it was basically a technical problem, right? And we were able to show that even quantum mechanical super operators, their fixed points can still be effectively found in P space. Okay, and that's P space was just the answer. Okay, but now there's kind of a final part of this story that I wanted to tell you. And then I'll open it up to questions. Three or four years ago, I was then at MIT before I moved to Austin, but an undergrad named Giulio Gualtrini just walked into my office, just totally unannounced, I know you, and he says, listen, I want to know, can closed time-like curves, let you solve the halting problem? Okay, so he's now setting his sights much higher. How many of you know what the halting problem is? Okay, so the halting problem is a problem that, where I give you a computer program, I ask you to decide, does it run forever or not? Okay, does it ever stop running? Okay, this is a very famous problem because, Alan Turing in 1936, in the paper where he sort of introduced the modern notion of what a computer is, right? The other big thing he did in that paper is that he proved that there is no computer program that can possibly solve this halting problem, right? In any amount of time, right? So on this halting problem is above p space, above x. It doesn't even fit on the board. Okay, it's not solvable. Even in 2 to the 2 to the 2 to the whatever amount of time you like. Okay, because there's sort of if it were solvable at all, there's a self-referential paradox, right? That you could then take a program, run it effectively on its own code, and make it so that if it ever halts, then it runs forever, and if it runs forever, then So he was asking, could we use closed time-like curves to solve a literally unsolvable problem for conventional computers? And I was like, well, let me explain. We had this paper. We proved that closed time-like curves give you p space. you know, P space is very different from the halting problem because, you know, and I start explaining it. He says, I read the paper. Okay, but, you know, what I want to know is something different. I said, you know, you were assuming that inside the closed timeline curve, you know, can only be, you know, some fixed number of bits, like some polynomial in N number of bits, and there's just a universal bound on that. Okay, what if there's no bound? You know, in any sort of branch, you know, there's a finite number of bits, but there's no uniform upper bound on how many bits there could be, right? In different branches, there could be different numbers of bits. Then could we solve the halting problem with a closed time-like curve? And so I said, well, in that case, I don't even know what the model is, because the problem is, you know, if we don't have a sort of a, if our space of states is infinite, then Deutsch's observation breaks down. In that case, we can have evolutions that have no fixed point, not even a probabilistic fixed point. Does anyone have an example of such an evolution?
Just keep adding a bit.
Thank you, yes. Yeah, let's say the evolution where I take as input a non-negative integer n, and my output is n plus 1. Okay? You've seen this evolution before, right? And the relevant property is that there is no probability distribution over non-negative integers that is left in that is a fixed point of this map, right? Because just think about it, right? Just you know, there would have to be some least positive integer that has any support in the distribution. But then, you know, we apply this map and you find that it can't have support. So I said, okay, so fixed points don't even always exist. So what are we even talking about, right? What is Deutsch's model here? So then he said, okay, you know, he just was unfazed by that. He said, let's just consider those maps for which a fixed point does exist. In other words, let's suppose you're promised that there is a fixed point. Okay, and then, you know, would the ability to find that fixed point let you solve the halting problem? Okay, the question. So, he and I thought about that for a bit, and the answer turns out to be yes. Okay, you can solve the halting problem. All right. So let me show you this. This will be the last algorithm that I show you. So let's say. You know, we're given as input a computer program M, right? And we want to decide whether M will ever stop running, right? Or in other words, is there a positive integer K such that M halts after you run it for K steps? Or does M just run forever, right? By the way, if, you know, any math people want to know, you know, like a good example for the halting problem, right? Imagine writing a program that just searches for counterexamples to the Goldbach conjecture. And then halts as soon as it finds one, right? Or searches for counterexamples to the Riemann hypothesis, you know, for zeros off the critical line, right? You know, a huge number of famous unsolved math problems you can phrase are just particular cases of the halting problem. So let's say we've got our program M that's, you know, in Kedem's Goldbach conjecture or whatever it is. We take a non-negative integer k from the future, as usual, just a conventional thing. We run m for k steps. Okay, and now if M halts in exactly K steps, we send back K. If M has halted in fewer than K steps, we just send back zero. Right, so we go back to the beginning. Now, if M has not halted after K steps, this is the most interesting one. We send back 0 or K plus 1 with equal probabilities. So this is the program. Okay? So now let's first suppose that that M halts in some number of steps. Then what are the fixed points of this evolution? K, yes. If M halts in K steps, then this evolution has one and only one fixed point, and the fixed point is K. Okay. Now, more interesting, what if M runs forever? Then what are the fixed points? 0. The 0 is not going to be a fixed point because, if I do 0, then, I could get into this branch, right? And then I go to 0 or 1 with equal probability. And then in the 1 branch, yeah? Well, okay, well, there's no uniform distribution over non-negative integers, right? But there's something. There's no uniform distribution, but there are other distributions over all the integers. Yeah.
Like a half chance of returning 0, a quarter chance of returning 1, and an eighth chance of returning 0.
Exactly. It's an exponentially distributed random variable, right? So the fixed point that I end up with, you can work this out for yourself if. Believe me, it's basically like 0 with probability half, 1 with probability 1 quarter, 2 with probability 1 eighth, and so forth. Okay? So, it's a distribution with infinite support, but, a distribution nonetheless.
Okay?
And that's if you just draw the picture, each of these moves forward or goes all the way back to the beginning with equal probabilities, right? And then this exponential, fall off is the fixed point of that. Okay? So, of this infinite Markov chain. Okay? So then, either way, when you see the output, well then, let's say the output is K, well then you can run your machine for K steps. And if it halts in K steps, then your machine halts, and if not, then your machine doesn't halt. Okay, so then that solves the halting problem. So then we got very interested in the question, well, could you do even more than the halting problem? Because why not, right? Maybe there are even harder things in computability theory than the halting problem. Like there's the halting problem for machines that had magical oracles to solve the halting problem. You could call that the super halting problem, right? There's the halting problem for machines with oracles for the super halting problem. You could call that the super duper halting problem. And so forth. Okay, so how far do you go? Okay, so then the main result that we proved in this more recent paper from a year or two ago, and this is by me, Mohammed Bavarian, and Julia Gualtrini, is that what you can do in this model of unbounded closed time white curves is basically, whatever you could do with an ordinary computer with an oracle for the ordinary halting problem. So it doesn't go beyond the halting problem. Okay? And furthermore, this is true even if you have a quantum computer. Again, quantum mechanics doesn't change the answer. Okay? And so to do that, we had to consider an arbitrary, unbounded, closed time light curve computer, and we had to show how you could simulate it by an ordinary computer with nothing more than an oracle for the halting problem. Okay? And so we gave an algorithm to do that, right? And the algorithm involves sort of looping over all possible approximations to all possible fixed points that the closed time light curve computer could have. Now there's a continuum of possible fixed points, right, with all distributions or all quantum states, What we do is, within that continuum, we find a countable dense set, right? Just like the rationals are dense in the reals, right? And we loop over all the elements of this countable dense set, okay? And then for each element, say that an element is sigma, what we do is we use our oracle for the Holting problem to see, is it the case that, like, S of, you know, when I apply, let's say my operation is C, when I apply C to sigma T times, I get back to something close to sigma. Is that the case for all T? Right? You know, if I have an oracle for the Holting problem, then I just loop over all T, and I hold if I ever find one where C to the T sigma is far from sigma. Okay? You know, if that program runs forever, then that means, well, you know, as I apply C over and over and over, I always stay close to sigma. But then the question is, well, so what? What does that mean, right? Well, it's clear that if sigma is close to an actual fixed point of C, right, meaning like a rho such that C of rho equals rho, if sigma is close to such a rho, then this, you know, this approximate equality will hold. Okay? The difficulty we have was the converse direction. Okay? You know, suppose that, you know, as I apply C over and over, I always stay close to sigma. Then must sigma be close to some exact solution, rho? So we were able to prove that the answer is yes. I had to learn something about functional analysis in order to prove that. Something called the Ries representation theorem. Whatever. We used the, you know, we found the right math to use. And so we proved that, and then that gave us our algorithm with a Hold oracle. So that I think that sort of settled the computability theory for closed time with curves. So since I'm running out of time, let me stop there, and I'm happy to take a few questions. Yeah?
So are you assuming you have just a random number generator? Because sending, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm assuming that you have a probabilistic Turing machine. So it's a yes. So something able to, you know, generate randomness, yes.
So wouldn't it give the same randomness every time? Because,
Okay. So I think it's more, you know, I find it more intuitive to think of it as a quantum computer inside the closed time like curve. Right, and then, you know, if I say, I could just say, like, I create this superposition state, right? You know, and then it's you know, it's this, this, you know, if I were to measure it, it's this same distribution every time, right? So, so it's the same distribution every time, but, you know, but yeah, but what we do assume that you have the ability to generate a distribution with actual randomness. Yeah.
Let's say I have a quantum state,
yep.
And I measure it,
yep.
It's positive to one of the ideas,
yep.
And I push it through a time like those time like curve, and
yep.
I go to a point before my measurement.
Yep.
What would I have? Would I have the superposition back?
Sorry, I'm not sure I understood the question.
Okay, so I have I have a superposition.
Yep.
I measure it.
Yep.
I get a eigenstate.
Uh-huh.
Now I put this ensemble into a closed time like curve,
uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
I get it back to uh-huh. a point in time that was below before I measure.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
What I get from measurement of
So what you'll get is whatever is a fixed point of the super operator that you apply, right? If the super operator involves measuring, then the fixed point of that is going to be like the classical probability distribution over the measurement outcomes, right? It's not going to be the super, right? Superposition is not going to survive one pass in a measurement, right? So the fixed point would just be like the classical state, like a diagonal density matrix. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the algorithm you give is deterministic, is it?
No.
So can you de-randomize it?
I think one could actually show that there's no completely deterministic algorithm that's going to work here. How could we show that? I'm not sure if I ever thought about that. That's a good question. Suppose that we're completely deterministic. right? Oh, yeah. So if I'm interested in finding completely deterministic fixed points, those are always going to be cycles of some finite length. Right? So then I can just keep looping over longer and longer cycles, you know, by the assumption that that a fixed point exists. Eventually, I'll find a cycle of some finite length, you know, and then I'll be done. Right?
Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, the point is that, you know, if the evolution were deterministic, then the fixed points can always be finitely described, right? It's just a cycle of a finite length.
Right.
So then I just loop over, you know, I iterate over all the possible cycles until I would find one. So I don't do anything computable. Good question. Yeah.
Why can't you just use the normal, like, self-referential problem paradox? Like, showing that why doesn't the classical proof of the undecidability of the Hilbert problem work on this?
Oh, you're saying, like why
can't
you use that proof? Okay, good. So what we would show is that this model of computers with closed time-like curves cannot solve its own halting problem. Okay, that would be the conclusion that we would get if we ran Turing's proof on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that we would then get that, like, using this model, which could merely solve the halting problem, that you could not solve the super halting problem, right? That would be the conclusion that you'd get out.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. I would have loved to stay for pizza, but we have to take a faculty candidate for dinner. So forgive me for running. I thought that the meeting was at 4, but sorry about that. All right. Well, great meeting all of you. Thanks for listening.